Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes for another week. I'm Naveen Razik. Alongside me, as always, it's Joshua Carroll Walden. We have plenty to discuss, but we'll start off first in the world of Formula One, where it's been a quieter week than usual, which is somewhat surprising given the actions that happened last weekend and a very, very, very spicy Baku Grand Prix. Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton colliding. Sebastian Vettel arguably getting away with a light penalty for that. However, we do now have the results of the FIA investigation into the incident afterwards, because they reopened the case and they decided not to increase the penalty. Sebastian Vettel will have to do 12 months, effectively, of good behaviour, and he won't be allowed to promote any road safety because it could send mixed messages. But other than that, he gets away with it relatively unscathed, and he doesn't have any disqualifications or race bans or any sort of points penalty on his neck for the next race. Josh, do you think this was the right decision? Do you think he got away with it? Or is it, if they were going to dock him points or interfere with the race result, could things have gotten really messy a la Bathurst last year and the like?
Well, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. I think, you know, just for Vettel and Ferrari, I think, you know, this announcement is a very big sigh of relief, because, you know, it very easily could have been, you know, a disqualification or a race ban or whatever. So for, you know, everyone's breathing a little bit easier at Maranello right now. But in terms of the whole FIA and making it messy, I'm really not a fan of changing the race result after everyone's packed up and gone home. But yeah, this is just something that we haven't seen for a very, very long time and won't see again for a long time also. So it's one of those in extremely rare circumstance situations. So yeah, I was questionable about why the FIA would reopen this, and, you know, just, you know, because that's basically, it's almost inviting more comments to stir the pot, which is already extremely chaotic. So yeah,
my concern as well coming into this, because just to think about, yeah, Bathurst is the obvious precedent. That got really messy because, well, they first of all have to reassertion who was going to have blame and things like that. So that was, I guess, a slightly different thing to this. But also the fact that the FIA needs to show that it's got a bit of backbone and that it does sort of respect the decisions on the stewards they have on the day. Now, of course, this changes from week to week. And I remember hearing the names of stewards being read out, and there was nobody I could recognise. And I think, like, yeah, the president of the Azerbaijani Motorsports Association is there or something as well. So there are issues, I guess, in the consistency of the rulings week on week, because the crew does change a lot. But then again, you do need to keep a variety of opinion. But my particular issue is the FIA, if they'd come out and said they got it wrong, I think that would have set a bad precedent, or they said, this is too harsh, we're going to retrospectively, I guess, change the results. That's when things get messy, particularly at this stage of the year. If this is at the end of the year, final race, and this happens, I'll be perfectly fine with them disqualifying him, or even going the full Schumacher and stripping him of all his points, because at that point, it won't affect the championship anymore. He was going to get a penalty no matter what. You might as well make an example of it. But I guess here it's a bit weird. It's a bit difficult. And I guess another example, I guess, is something where the board hasn't treated the wrong way from another sport entirely. It's from rugby union, the 2015 semi-final between Australia and Scotland, where right after a controversial decision by one of the referees, which ultimately led to Australia getting the win, the World Rugby came out and said, no, this is wrong completely. They didn't change it, but they publicly rebuked the referee's decision. And I think that would have been very dangerous as well. So I think they've done the best they can. But yeah, it's sort of awkward. I mean, these are sort of investigations that are open but don't really achieve anything. I think, if anything, this is probably the best result we can hope for. Sebastian Vettel doing 12 months of good behaviour, and he's also got the 3 penalty points off the licence, so he's only another 3 penalty points away from a race ban. So he's already got that over him. But because F1 doesn't really offer opportunities for points penalties and the like that, they're sort of restricted in what they can do. And I guess it's sort of what, like, we were talking last time, where maybe we need to think about changing the penalties when it comes to pure sporting decisions as opposed to mechanical issues or accidents and things like that. If somebody is driving in a dangerous and frankly unsporting way, what do we do about it? Yeah, it's a difficult one, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's never really, you know, that good. Like, I still remember, you know, driving home from Bathurst last year, listening on the radio, and, you know, it's still the actual result of the race that I went to and watched while I was driving home was still being decided. So that's never a fantastic, that's never a great thing to happen. The situation right now itself is very balanced. Like, if Vettel does a similar act to warrant the same amount of penalty points, then he will will not be able to race at the British Grand Prix towards the end of the month. If he behaves himself and, you know, just gets the car to the end of the race on Sunday, no matter what the position, then, you know, he gets three penalty points taken away, I believe. That's the situation right now. So I think it's, you know, very, very fragilely balanced right now in terms of Vettel's situation, the championship itself, the races to come, and the relationship between the F1, the FIA, the Liberty Media, and also as well the actual F1 season and the racing product itself. So I think, you know, any action from here on in over the next, I'd have to say, few weeks will have to be very, very calculated and very, very cautious, because this could really spill over and become, you know, immensely more messy and ugly and just so unappealing to the general public very, very quickly. So in that sense, you know, it really does set up, you know, what is, you know, possibly going to be one of the most interesting Austrian Grand Prix that there have ever been.
And last year already set a high bar for that, so it could be completely off the charts. With that as well, yeah, Josh, yeah. We haven't mentioned the fact that Sebastian Vettel did apologise, which is the first time I think he apologised for the incident at all. I don't think he even said anything after the race. He said it wasn't his fault. So I guess there's a bit of a step forward from there. But yeah, it just shows that the maturity in Sebastian Vettel is still lacking. And I guess for people like me who thought he'd actually made a change and matured since his time as Red Bull, I don't think that's happened, and it's just, nothing's changed. I mean, Mark Webber will probably attest to this, but yeah, the inner racer in him and the sort of the determined person sometimes gets in the way of a nice personality. But anyway, he apologised, and I think it let him off the hook, but yeah, it does set the stage for an interesting Austrian Grand Prix, where, of course, last year we had two Mercedes collide. Could it be a Mercedes and a Ferrari this time? As well, where does Valtteri Bottas and Kimi Raikkonen figure into that? Because we won't rule them out of a championship either, particularly if the fight between these two gets so ugly that it results in some pretty big DNS for both of them.
Yeah, yeah. And let's not forget, you know, we're still actually learning about, you know, what strengths and weaknesses the Mercedes and the Ferrari have. And from everything I've seen so far, I would say that the Mercedes is better in the straight line and the more high speed corners, whereas the Ferrari is much more of a handling car. You know, its strength is in the corners itself, and then just on the straight, you know, whether it's, you know, just down to engine power or engine power or aerodynamic drag or a bit of both, we don't know. So from everything I've seen, I would say that the Mercedes does have the straight line speed, which will favour Austria. This is basically the perfect storm for a typical Lewis Hamilton comeback weekend. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least if Hamilton did a pole, fast lap victory and did the Grand Slam at Austria. That wouldn't really surprise me in the slightest. And also, Mercedes have won every single race since the Red Bull Ring came back on the calendar. So that sets up one remark. So, yeah, and also as well, there are 14 points separating Vettel and Hamilton in the standings. So it could be very, very tight hanging into a very, very interesting British Grand Prix. And I don't think even, you know, the British F1 fans know how they're going to react come the British Grand Prix. So, and then beyond that, you know, we've got the Hungaroring, and then we've got the month-long break, and then we've got the remainder of the European League, and then we go to Singapore for the Asian League. So it's very, very delicately poised right now. So, and also as well, let's not forget that the battle for third is going to be extremely interesting this weekend between Red Bull, Force India, and Williams, as all three of those teams can, you know, realistically claim that they are the third best team in Austria this weekend.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be very interesting, particularly when you look at the next few rounds. You could argue that they're all very much going to somewhat favour the Mercedes in terms of they're very quick, but then Silverstone could go either way. It's always been very delicate balance. Same with Spa, and you never know what will happen with Italy. The European leg of the season is always going to be, I guess, where the championship is won and lost. That's where it's been in the past, and I think that's probably what will happen in the future. Now, going on to some other news that broke just a little bit before the weekend, news that Ron Dennis has now completely left the building at McLaren. He's cut all of his ties, stepped down from the board of the company and the empire, effectively, he built over 37 years. Now, whilst Dennis has not been in charge of the McLaren F1 team for most of the year, I think he was ousted at the end of last year, and this was always going to be a matter of coming. It's still of incredible significance that he's leaving entirely. £275 million he's going to value his shares at. He was ousted last November, and this is a man who, under his watch, has seen McLaren grow and grow. He pretty much won them, ensured their period of dominance in the 80s and 90s with Lauda, Prost, Senna, Hakkinen, and of course their recent renaissance with Lewis Hamilton, and now he's gone completely. It's extraordinary that, like Bernie Ecclestone, one of the great titans of Formula One is leaving, and yeah, it is the end of an era for McLaren Honda, and it's going to be very interesting, of course, to see where they go post this and post Fernando Alonso, where we really don't know what the future holds for them.
Yeah, absolutely, and let's not forget for a second that Ron Dennis has just as big of a legacy as Bernie Ecclestone, as, you know, the McLaren name, it will forever be synonymous with the world of F1. You know, even if the day would come, you know, there's no definites, but if the day comes where McLaren no longer fields an F1 team, they'll always be synonymous, you know, through the likes of Ron Dennis and the founder, Bruce McLaren, as, you know, as you said to me, you know, he built an empire, and, you know, for a long, long time, you know, McLaren was, you know, really right up there with the big boys and manufacturers, and, you know, was always, you know, extremely feared. Like, you know, every single team up until a few years ago, unfortunately, you know, always, you know, feared McLaren in terms of their pace and what they can deliver, and just their general operations, as, you know, that they are just one of the best racing teams that the world's ever seen. So, yeah, it's definitely the end of an era, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where McLaren goes in terms of, you know, under the leadership of Zak Brown. It's looking very exciting with the basically revival of a McLaren IndyCar team. But, you know, even then, you know, what in terms of the actual F1 team, you know, yes, it's definitely going to stay. There's no question about that. But, you know, what the future will actually look like for McLaren Honda in F1, we just don't know yet. So, yeah, you know, he's going to have to manage, well, right now Zak Brown's managing Fernando Alonso, where he's going to fit in all this, and, you know, and if the results continue to be very, very poor, you know, well, right now we're sort of in the holding pattern of the divorce between McLaren and Honda, with, you know, rumours going rife the past few weeks about, you know, McLaren, you know, basically going back to Mercedes power units from a future date. We which hasn't really even been confirmed yet. Like a lot of people are saying 2018, but you know, 2018 is getting closer and closer. But anyway, so yeah, and like if the poor results continue, then he's gonna have to really then deal with a very disgruntled Stoffel Vandoorne, who does have the potential to win a world championship, and everyone knows that up and down the pit lane. So yeah, like you could, you know, go from one very disgruntled and, you know, bitter world champion to a potential future world champion. So that'll be an absolute nightmare. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the future exactly holds for McLaren Honda, and there are definitely a lot of challenges in the way for them before they can get back to where they were at the peak of Ron Dennis's era. And, you know, just winning championships, winning Grand Prix, and, you know, just living the dream, basically. So, yeah, it's all up in the air. And right now, McLaren is at they are at a crossroads in terms of just their general F1, future, and also the opportunity that is IndyCar right now. So we'll have to wait and see on that. And, you know, the changes will continue to come through at McLaren. And we'll just have to wait and see what Zach Brown's next move is.
With that, do we want to now that Dennis has left the building, say that we can probably now almost certainly say that the decision to switch from McLaren Mercedes to McLaren Honda was probably the final nail in the coffin for him. Of course, the other big scandal he weathered was Spygate in 2007, but he got through that fairly well. I mean, they went on to win the Drivers' Championship the year after, but it is almost certain now that, I guess it is in a bit of a sad way, that the last bit of legacy he had in the McLaren Honda trying to revive their brand is now going to be dismantled. But I guess that's just a little bit of cruel irony, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah, it is a bit, but, you know, even then, you know, like, you know, McLaren were really, you know, starting to hit problems in 2013 with the arrival of Sergio Perez. And just not being able to cope with the loss of Lewis Hamilton to Mercedes. So, and then just, you know, the following year, you know, in 2014, the last year of their Mercedes power unit, that, you know, they weren't that competitive either with Magnussen and Button. So, yeah, and then, you know, there was the McLaren Honda, and it just hasn't worked. So, yeah, it is, yeah, like, you can certainly, you know, tell that, you know, just from a, you know, actual, you know, team boss standpoint, that the whole, you know, basically sour end, disappointing finish to their previous relationship with Mercedes would have taken its toll. And then, you know, like, you know, the McLaren Honda deal and, you know, just being absolutely nowhere compared to where McLaren have been under Ron Dennis, you know, the worst that they've ever been, you know, really would be the final nail in the coffin. And, you know, you wouldn't have thought that, you know, 5-10 years ago that McLaren Honda would have a very, very real chance in finishing last in the constructors' standings. So, yeah, all of those would have taken a toll, you know, especially when you consider, you know, how much success McLaren has had under Ron Dennis. So yeah, it definitely would. And, you know, I think, you know, he'll definitely, you know, enjoy, you know, just not having any pressures, not having to deal with the media, not managing any of the drivers, and you know, just doing what he wants to do. And, like, you know, I think, you know, it would be safe to say that, you know, he certainly won't disappear from the world of F1, but as you know, I can certainly see him, you know, just hanging around the F1 paddock, you know, and just enjoying this time. So yeah, a very very bittersweet. You know, he tried the McLaren Honda and tried to revive it, and yeah, just he wouldn't have been happy about, you know, just the philosophy that Honda has right now. So yeah, it's all a bit messy. And yeah, I think, you know, this is a good time for him to leave, and just a good time for McLaren to just evolve into something else. As you know, just Ron Dennis, he's tried his hardest, but, you know, he's just not getting the support he needs to actually continue to make McLaren a great F1 team. So I think this is just the natural stage of the just the evolution into the next era, the Zak Brown era of McLaren.
Which certainly has to have happened, and one could argue that it should have happened several years ago. Now, let's move on to the Austrian Grand Prix that, of course, kicks off later this week on Friday. A difficult one to call still, although I would put Mercedes slightly in front because this is a track that will suit the faster cars, and I guess I think Hamilton will be in a bit of a better headspace than Vettel on this one. So I think my pick for the race is Hamilton. Josh, what would you say? Would that be optimistic, or do you think that Ferrari might still have something left in them?
Well, it's difficult to say because I don't really think that, you know, Ferrari would have paid anywhere near the amount of attention that Mercedes have had at the Austrian Grand Prix with the whole, Vettel v Hamilton, and the FIA penalty. Like, they would have had their attention elsewhere. So I think, it's not an expectation, but it's a high probability that we will see Lewis Hamilton on the top step of the podium. Like, I just think that right now, Vettel, he's going to find it a little bit difficult this weekend, but I just think that, he's going to scrape through for a podium. And, because I've just been basically envisaging, for quite some time after the Azerbaijan Grand Prix that it would be an awkward podium at the Red Bull Ring. And, I generally, still believe that. I still believe that Vettel will be on the podium with Hamilton and, have mercy on whoever's soul is, with them on the podium, because it's going to be very, awkward. But, that would mainly depend on how the actual race weekend at the Red Bull Ring unfolds. So, Mercedes, they'll have the edge, and, they really, can't really afford to just bottle it and give Ferrari even more space, as even though they are ahead in the constructors' stands, it wouldn't take that much for it to become a Ferrari runaway. As the following race at Silverstone, that could go either way. That's up for grabs. Hungary, that's going to be favoured by Ferrari. Belgium again, that could go either way. And then Monza, you would think Mercedes, but the strength of the Tifosi cannot be underestimated, and then that's the end of the European season. So it's very delicately balanced, and Mercedes should feel under pressure to perform, even though they did actually finish on the podium with Valtteri Bottas in second place.
Right, so that wraps up a preview of the Austrian Grand Prix that kicks off this Friday. Let's move now back to Australia and to the Supercars Championship. They've been a little bit of a break after heading up north to take on Hidden Valley, but they'll be back this weekend at Townsville. In the meantime, there's been plenty of action off the track and on the testing tracks in particular, with AAA completing their first track test of the brand new Gen 2 V6 twin turbo, single turbo engine. The 3.6-litre unit was fitted to their Sandman car, which is basically a supercar's car, but a hatch and a wagon instead. Did about 250 km at Norwell Motorplex on the Gold Coast. It's run very, very well indeed. It looks like we're going to have a very solid V6 entry, which won't be in for next year, remember. It's going to be in for the year after, so there's still plenty of work to be done, but it does look like the engine gamble that Holden in particular and the Sport in particular are taking could work off quite well, because it looks like they're really being able to get that turbo working nicely.
Yeah, and they're really taking their time as well. So, it's a bit reminiscent of the Haas F1 approach. Just take your time, learn what you can, and then enter. But this time, it actually generally looks like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was competitive straight off the bat. Just given how much resources are at AAA's and General Motors' disposal, as they're really putting the effort in with this car. So all positive signs from from Norwell, as you know, there weren't any reported hiccups or issues or anything. But you would expect that at some point before their debut. If there wasn't, you'd sort of be a little bit unsure and a little bit cautious. But yeah, it looks very, very promising. And we basically said this a couple of weeks ago. Red Bull, won't really put a racing product on the track if it wasn't going to be competitive. And that's why we've said already, that's why they're delaying it to 2019. So it very well could be on the grid in both in all three AAA cars at Adelaide next year, but it just wouldn't be as competitive as what they want it to be. So it's very, very promising. And it wouldn't be a massive shock for me if they had their wild card entry that they're going to run at a few events next year ready for Clipsaw, as that would really make a statement to all the other Nissan and to Ford, as well as any manufacturers looking in, about how serious and how confident they are in their product for 2019 and beyond. So it's looking very, very promising. And we can't really read that much into it, because the actual report of the test was a bit of a short article. So it's underway, it's alive, it's breathing, and it seems like it's progressing along very well, simultaneously to the next gen Commodore body, as even though they don't have Ludo anymore, they're definitely taking a long hard look at it and seeing how they can exploit all the body panels and the components and everything like that to make sure that the next gen Commodore is as competitive as possible come March next year. So right now it's just a slow but very dangerous looking build up to the 2019 season.
Yeah, certainly it looks like it's going to be exciting. Some other news coming out, some very important news in particular for this year's Bathurst 1000. News that Dunlop will revert to last year's specification tyre for the race after there were concerns about the construction of the tyres earlier this year at the Phillip Island 500. The soft tyre in particular was the one which was having considerable issues, primarily because of a build-up of heat in the tyre sidewall and because of some of the settings used by the teams in terms of camber. They're going to revert to the tyre for Bathurst, the 2016 tyre, and the Auckland Super Sprint, which was also going to be run on the soft compound tyre. So they're going to have to produce a whole batch of new tyres on the old specification, 1,400 in total. A common sense decision, Josh, because let's face it, if something like Phillip Island happens at Bathurst, you're going to have a whole lot of angry punters on your hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a very good decision, because we've had seen a lot of tyre issues at Bathurst and at Pukekohe in the past already, and it would be very, very dangerous if one of these tyres let go at Reed Park in the opening few laps, and that would cause an absolute car park of destruction and mayhem at the top of the mountain. So I think just for safety and for the races and for common sense, it is a logical decision. The super soft tire, it's working pretty well. Only a minor amount of failures, but nothing compared to the soft tire at Phillip Island, nothing compared to what we saw at Phillip Island earlier this year. So I think just keeping the hard tire for the extremely high tire compound, high demanding tires, events basically at Phillip Island, Bathurst, and at Pukekohe, I think that's a pretty smart decision.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, not much in the way of Supercars news. We head straight to Townsville for the Townsville 400. Always a great streak circuit. One of the most difficult ones on the calendar and certainly toughest physically. The demands of Townsville, which is flat, not undulating at all. There's plenty of work on the driver in particular. And I think it's going to certainly put some of the rookies at the back of the field to the test. As to who's in contention, it is still very difficult. You can't really look past Scott McLaughlin, who's won four of the last six races. But you also can't look past Coulthard, who's leading the championship. And then again, we're still waiting for that win for Jamie Whincup, who's, despite not having won a race all year, is still only 16 points off the lead. All he needs is a very good result ahead of the other two guys to really close up on that championship lead. Which will be extraordinary. And of course, Van Gisbergen and Mossert are also up there as well. So it's another difficult one to pick, Josh. I still have really no clue who to go for. I think one of my locks would be McLaughlin, but that would be it. I think whoever would win the other race, there's such a huge variety. If anything, depending on who gets the setup right, and this possibly might favour DJR Penske because they've just had consistently stronger setups all year, is really going to decide, I think, which side comes out on top.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to pick who's on form at the moment. But in terms of Townsville, you can't really look past Jamie Whincup. Like, he's got 8 wins at the circuit already, so he really knows his way around Townsville. And, he's had a lot of success in the past, so he knows. He exactly knows, what to do in terms of, the space setup at Townsville. So I think this is going to be the weekend where Whincup scores his first win. If that's not the case, then heading along, just looking ahead, we've only got Queensland Raceway and Sydney Motorsport Park before the Enduro Cup. So yeah, I think it has to be this weekend at Townsville. In the past, I'm just looking at this now, in the past 6 races, he's had 5 podiums. So, and that's just incredible, and that he's not been able to win a race. So, I think, at Townsville this weekend, it's going to be his weekend where he finally breaks through. He won't win both the races, but for me, I think Whincup will definitely win one, and, just McLaughlin right now, he's just in such a good space right now. He's just loving life. So Townsville, he's going to be pretty good there. He hasn't been amazing there in the past, but, just with the form and with Ludo in his corner, he's going to be really hard to beat. Shane Van Gisbergen, fresh from the 6 hours of Watkins Glen, where he finished 4th, I believe. He'll be ready and rearing to go. It wasn't a perfect weekend for him this time last year at Townsville. He made a few mistakes. He's going to be on form. Then Fabian Coulthard, basically, I think Fabian Coulthard definitely deserves the tag of Mr. Consistent so far this season, just getting the points where he needs to. And, he will feature heavily in the top 5 in both races this weekend. So, yeah, all 4 championship contenders, they've got really serious, real genuine chance at picking up a win this weekend. And then, of course, you've got the outside chances, basically the 3 pro drive cars are Mossert, Winterbottom, and Cam Waters as well. So, yeah, it's hard to pick. I saw Kelly as well for Nissan saying that they really want to turn around their form at Townsville as well. So there are a lot of factors that you need to factor in here. And this is the first real genuine look at as to who's gained the most out of the first series of test days and practice sessions and all the like. So, yeah, this really does, start the run towards the Enduros and ultimately towards Newcastle.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a great run. That kicks off this Friday, the Townsville 400. Moving now to the United States and to the Verizon IndyCar Series. We're set to go racing at the Iowa Corn 300 And in particular, it looks like Honda in particular will be stronger than ever. Their president of performance development, Art Sanjaya, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that, but yeah, their president of development says that they found the problems that they've had with reliability, the parts in particular, which has been in the engines for a couple of years, but it's only really been showing issues now. They're going to replace a couple of engines before the race. Presumably, those are the front-running Chip Ganassi cars. Scott Dixon, in particular, will be front and center, and the Andretti cars as well. If this happens, well, you have to say it's going to be a Honda car that finishes up on top, because they have just been on almost every single circuit, with the exception of the 1.5-kilometer ovals, I think, has been the only ones, and the short ovals. They didn't win at Phoenix either. Have been the only two circuits where they haven't had a win at some point in the season. And you'd have to say, coming into this weekend, yeah, you can't really, if Scott Dixon gets a good engine, you can't really look past him again. He's just really starting to hit that vein of form that has made him so dangerous so far throughout his career and so far this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott Dixon, when you actually ignore, all the engine packages and the aero packages, is just a standout driver right now in IndyCar. So if he gets another win at Iowa this weekend, it's going to be really difficult for everyone else to just try and, catch up, because, Pagano, he's with Chevrolet, he's second in the standings. Castro Neves, he's third in the standings. Chevrolet, Sano, he's a he's still very, very rough and, probably, doesn't have the ability to take it to Dixon and win the championship. Newgarden, Chevrolet, Will Power, Chevrolet, Graham Rahal, he's on the but, he's a long way back. So, yeah, Scott Dixon right now looks very, very dangerous. However, him and Iowa don't really go well together. So we could see, someone along the likes of Graham Rahal, Alexander Rossi, or even Ryan Hunter-Reay take the race win this weekend, as Scott Dixon has never, he hasn't won at Iowa throughout his career. So yeah, and he hasn't done amazingly at Iowa in the past. Like he's done well, but he hasn't been amazing at Iowa in the past. So yeah, it's gonna be difficult, to go back. Very difficult to go past the Honda this weekend, and Scott Dixon will pick up a lot of points. So, yeah, basically, realistically, he just needs to have a good setup, get a big bag of points, keep doing that for the rest of the season, and bang, he's won the championship. So, yeah, it's gonna be still a good weekend for sure. Just to see how Penske approach this weekend and the rest of the season. Following that revelation from Honda that that power unit is fantastic right now, and certainly has the ability to wipe the floor for the Chevrolets. So yeah, that they're in a difficult spot right now. So yeah, on the whole, I think we could see another victory for Rahal, Rossi, or Hunter-Reay, or even James Hinchcliffe. So yeah, this weekend at Iowa, Iowa always a fantastic circuit for IndyCar. It's going to be a fantastic race. Yeah, we know it's going to be Honda, but which one? And Scott Dixon, this could be the weekend where he really starts to run away with his championship.
The only possible wild card I would put in there would be Joseph Newgarden, of course, in the Chevy. He had a fantastic run last year, winning with one arm down at what is effectively, I think, his home track. So you wouldn't certainly want to count him out as well. But yeah, should be another great IndyCar oval race that, of course, kicks off the manic run that we'll have. I think after this, we're going to Toronto, as well as the tail end of the season, where we'll start to see more road courses. We'll get to see some new tracks, of course, with Gateway. Another exciting run to the finish for IndyCar. Let's move now to NASCAR, which is already firming up for the run to the end of the regular season, with effectively the start of the second half of the season, with the second race at Daytona, the last race there for Dale Earnhardt Jr. An interesting race in that the front runners in the championship didn't do particularly well. I mean, Kyle Larson 29th, Martin Truex Jr. 34th, not the greatest of finishes. The winner, and the man who's currently sitting in just about in the top 16, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who came in there and just about salvaged the race. He was fending off a couple of other drivers. David Ragan, I think, was up there and could have possibly broken his drought. But nope, it was Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who looks like he'll be firming up as a contender in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is only his second win. And, yeah, once again, it's been on a super speedway restricted plate circuit. So fantastic for him. And, you know, if he is in the chase and if he does make it into the second round of the chase, then, you know, he could, you know, very easily slot himself into the third round, the round of eight, you know, with a win at Talladega. So, yeah, just a fantastic weekend for Stenhouse. You know, really, you know, starting to hit his strides in terms of his Monster Energy Cup Series career. You know, with the second win, always good to get. And yeah, just you know, real, you know, it is sort of a wild card in terms of the chase. You know, the expectations certainly aren't very great. You know, no one's really got Stenhouse as their championship favorite, but you know, he's there, and you know, he's right up the front. You know, he's putting in pretty okay performances. So yeah, just a fantastic weekend for Stenhouse. A lot of leaders, you know, taken out by the big one once again, and you know, heading into Kentucky and towards the end of the season, you know, it's, you know, looking as unpredictable as ever. You know, Kentucky, you know, that's traditionally been a strong circuit for Hendrick Motorsports and for Jimmy Johnson. So, but you know, even then, it's nothing to guarantee. So definitely heading into Kentucky this weekend, Hendrick, and also the Penske cars of Brad Keselowski and Joe Logano will definitely feature towards the end of the race. And that is always, you know, you've got your regular contenders, you know, Kyle Busch will be up there, so as well as Clint Bowyer, so they'll all be up there. So yeah, just another crazy race at Daytona, and yeah, just a very, very interesting top five, and you know, a very interesting top 10 as well, as you know, all the top nine of the championship, the best finish of the top nine of the championship right now was in fact Jimmy Johnson with 12th place. So yeah, it just shows how crazy and how scrappy and gritty the race to the chase is right now. So yeah, it's certainly, you know, shaping up to be what's going to be a very unpredictable few months. You know, afterwards, you know, they've got New Hampshire, then they've got Indianapolis, you know, a very big unknown, and then a couple of weeks later they've got Watkins Glen, and then they've got Bristol and Darlington back to back, and then the final race of the regular season at Richmond. So it's a very grueling race to the chase, and it's certainly going to be very close, and it will be the final stint that decides who gets in and who doesn't to the playoffs and the chase.
Yeah, certainly set to be exciting as we count down. I think we'll have a closer look at the contenders and see who's sitting there on the bubble, but certainly anything can happen in the world of NASCAR, and it certainly does. Moving from four wheels to two and the world of MotoGP, where we were back in action at the Sachsenring over the weekend for the German Grand Prix won by Marc Marquez, who is also pretty much staking his claim here for the championship. He now leads. He's overtaken Maverick Vinales, whose best finish was fourth and wasn't able to hold on to the championship lead. So with that, we now have a straight shootout between the Hondas and the Yamaha there. And possibly Andre Dovizioso is only 1 point behind Vinales, although he did finish eighth at the Sachsenring to the end of the season. We're effectively now are at the midpoint. But it does look incredibly interesting. And of course, you can't really rule out Alexander Rossi, who's only 10 points behind the leader. It's another very close MotoGP season, a series that is getting greater and greater. And the fact that this year now we do look like we're going to have a genuinely serious multi-manufacturer race for the championship looks very exciting indeed, particularly considered how strong the racing was last year, but we didn't really have a close championship as such. It looks like we're certainly going to get that this year, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. And from that crazy race at the Sachsenring, you know, Danny Pedrosa is, you know, starting to put his name in. Like, I actually if you remember, did, you know, sort of basically ride him off a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, he's right back in it now. He's only 26 points behind, though. So, you know, we could, you know, potentially see a five-way fight for the championship. And, yeah, just on the whole, what a crazy race it was. And, you know, how massive it was for MotoGP in Germany with Jonas Folger, the homeboy, coming in second place for Yamaha. Just insane, you know, and you know, certainly, you know, that just was the general theme of the race. You know, it was incredibly, you know, exciting and just on the edge, and just, you know, it beautifully sums up, you know, how good MotoGP is right now. So, yeah, it was crazy, and, you know, unfortunately now we have to sit through quite a bit of a break before MotoGP returns to the Czech Republic. And then, you know, the rest of the season will really kick off as, yeah, any five, you know, Marquez, Vinales, Divioto, Rossi and Pedrosa, any five of those guys can win the title this year. So, yeah, it's going to be extremely close heading into the, you know, I genuinely believe it will be deciding the final few races this year. And, yeah, it's just a real pain now that they're on the month-long break to the Czech Republic, as, yeah, it's MotoGP is just on such a good roll right now, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's a break and 1 month off, and, yeah, we just have to find something else to do in the meantime. So it's frustrating.
2017 does seem to be an incredibly competitive year in motorsport. We have a proper multi-manufacturer fight in Formula One. IndyCar, to be honest, could be a little bit better, but we still had a wide variety of winners and the like, and the fact that our championship contender only got his first win last weekend shows, at the last race, shows just how competitive the field still is. We've got a strong field in NASCAR despite the changes. We still have some real surprises cropping up there. Another strong year MotoGP, particularly in the championship battle, and supercars, where we have at least four guys, if not maybe even five, who are up there. This does look like this could be the dream motorsport year for everyone.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, there are still a few months to go, and those few months will, you know, basically define the year that was 2017, along with the, you know, the real big races this year and, you know, the crazy highlights. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic year so far, but, you know, almost all around the world is really getting into the business end, you know, whether that's, you know, F1, supercars, Formula E, MotoGP, NASCAR, IndyCar, whatever, you know, it's really getting to the business end, and, you know, this is where tensions will boil over, and they boil over most when it's a really close fight. And, you know, even though there's a long way to go in quite a few championships, there are a lot of championship contenders right around the world right now, really feeling the heat and really feeling the pinch. So, yeah. But even then, going back to MotoGP, you know, as I said, a shame that, you know, we have to sit through a month long break. But when they come back, you know, we have three races in August, two in September, three in October, and then the finale at Valencia in the second weekend of November. So, yeah, once it comes back, it's going to come back all guns blazing. So, yeah, MotoGP right now, you know, it's perfectly poised for a very enthralling, entertaining, and extremely unpredictable five-way fight for the championship.
Yeah, and that certainly does look very exciting indeed. We have a big weekend of motorsport coming up. We have the supercars in action in Australia, the Formula One Grand Prix of Austria, the latest round on the calendar, and the continuation of one of the new great rivalries, Hamilton versus Vettel of the modern era. We also have plenty of action. We have IMSA, I think, at Motorsport Park, NASCAR at Kentucky, IndyCar at Iowa, plenty of action over the weekend. We'll be back to wrap it all up next week, as well as preview another big weekend. We've got two huge weekends, thanks to two pretty big double headers. We also have Formula One in Britain coming up next weekend, as well as the 6 hours of the Nürburgring, Formula E returning, and the IndyCar round at Toronto. It will be a great show next week. But until then, I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye. There we are. Came all down right to just about 50 minutes in the end, so I think we timed that one pretty well.